Welcome to IT.
Welcome to IT, where we pair vision science and ophthalmology with a cup of your favorite beverage. Today's topic is a first for this show and delves into the realm of ocular prosthetics.
Our first guest is based out of New York City and is a model, photographer, and videographer. Besides being a triple threat, he has had to undergo a unique experience in terms of having monocular vision, and he does it in style. So he's an advocate for body positivity and the hashtag One Eye Gang. So thank you for being here today, JP. This is such a pleasure and an honor to have you on today. We are glad that you could join.
Hello. Thank you for the introduction. I appreciate it. So a little about myself. So I was born 2 months too early, and due to this, my eyes didn't develop properly. I had 20/20 vision until I was 7 years old. I was playing rugby and got a hard knock to my head. I tore the retina in both of my eyes. I was going blind. Luckily, the doctor was able to save my right eye, but I was now blind in my left eye. The thing I struggled with the most at the time was confidence. My blind eye started drifting and forming cataracts. Because I looked different, I was constantly bullied at school. Kids called me ugly. Pirates, cyclops. This made me feel like an outcast. I would go home and Google one-eyed models or actors simply to see, to feel like I could one day be successful. Unfortunately, there was no one at the time and I had no one to look up to. I eventually became a model despite the fact that I wasn't a Ken doll, I wasn't perfect. And this is why I eventually started a TikTok to bring awareness to people who are blind or wear prosthetics like myself. I named my TikTok One Eye Model because this is what I searched on Google as a child, and hopefully I can inspire people like myself.
That is such a beautiful, heartfelt story. Thank you for sharing that, JP. And for everyone in the audience, I've shared JP's profile link that is pinned to this talk, so you can always visit and see his amazing work that he's doing.
And with that, introduce our next guest, who is over 7,000 miles north of the equator and gets to witness the Northern Lights in the happiest country in the world. If you guessed Disney, try Suomi instead, the Finnish word for this country. It's my pleasure to introduce Laura Ruta, an ocularist and the founder of the Eye Prosthetic Clinic of Finland. With over a decade of experience, Laura is one of the most experienced and longest-serving manufacturers of ocular prosthetics in her country. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you. Okay. Nice to be here. I have been in this area of business for a little over 10 years, and it has been such an amazing adventure. I started this business when I was only 22 years old, because in Finland we had only one company that time that made artificial eyes. And once we had a school course about artificial eyes, and then we started Googling what prices and materials those artificial eyes were, and I found out that people were not happy the way Finland had prosthetic done. That's why when I finished school, I decided that it was time for me to offer something that Finland didn't have. And I am on the same path still, and it's going really well. And I'm really happy that I was brave enough to do that.
Well, we're incredibly lucky to have you, Laura. Thank you for joining us today. I'm delighted to introduce our final panelist here today. Dr. Margot Weinert is the chief resident and director of the eye trauma service at Mass Eye and Ear and Harvard Medical School. She oversees the busy eye trauma service at Mass Eye and Ear, Mass General Hospital, and Brigham and Women's Hospital. In addition, she serves as a mentor, teacher, and peer resource to all of the Harvard ophthalmology residents. During her residency, Dr. Weinert has distinguished herself as a talented and compassionate clinician, outstanding teacher, and an emerging leader. As a member of the Harvard Ophthalmology Resident and Wellness Committee, she's helping to develop trainee-focused programs to support resilience and facilitate access to a variety of important resources. As a physician, she's a compassionate and thoughtful individual, and she deals with some of the most complex eye injuries that come in through the Harvard hospital system. And as you can imagine, this often has her encountering patients that end up monocular. And so that's how she intersects with the panel today. So thanks for joining us, Margot. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Thanks, Grayson. Yeah, I am very excited to be here sipping my Lady Grey tea for IT today. Happy to be here from Boston. Yeah, I recently graduated last year from Harvard's residency program in ophthalmology and have been really enjoying this year being chief resident, and as part of that, you're director of our ocular trauma service. And so we get referrals from all through New England for a variety of ocular trauma. And as Grayson said, we are working with patients not only through the acute phase of their trauma, but these longer term processes as many of our patients do become monocular. So I'm excited to share our experience with you today.
For our first theme, we'd like to hear about your backstories. And I've had some of that already, but like we'd love to hear a little bit more. How familiar are you with the ocular prosthetics? Do you remember the first time you encountered someone who had one? And what was your reaction like?
When I was younger, I didn't really know about prosthetics. My eyes started deforming and shrinking because of the retinal detachment. And I kind of wanted a way to look normal because I was getting teased at school and people weren't really accepting me for who I was. Eventually, after a few years, my parents got me a prosthetic shell, which I've had 8 of since I was a child. I've had a few of them. And since I've started working with Laura, because the prosthetics are made to make you fit in, to make your life easier so you can have an ordinary life. But since I got older, I kind of felt like I was hiding myself. I wasn't being accepted by society. So I reached out to Laura and I wanted to make a prosthetic that was a blind eye because I feel like blind eyes can be beautiful. Society shouldn't dictate what beauty is. I reached out to Laura and she made me a galaxy. You guys can Google it. I was actually blind and it has the galaxy in his eyes. So after contacting Laura, she made me this custom prosthetic. And since then, I've been wearing it and I feel like it's made my life easier in the sense of I don't have to pretend anymore. I can wear the prosthetic. People will see me and they'll be like, hey, are you wearing a contact lens? What's going on? And I can just be honest and be like, listen, I'm blind in my eye. This is the prosthetic that I'm wearing. This is me. And it's kind of given me that freedom of just allowing myself to be myself. And that's been an amazing experience.
What a powerful perspective there. I think that is just so empowering that you just shared with us, JP. I'd love to hear that perspective. So with that being said, I'd love to hear some of the perspective of our clinicians on board as well. Please feel free to share your experience with us.
I do have a very kind of distinctive memory, actually, of my first encounter with an ocular prosthesis. I was in medical school, just developing an interest in ophthalmology. And as any medical students on the here might know, you get to do a lot of shadowing in ophthalmology early on. It's hard to get some good experience. And I went in to see a patient. I didn't have access to their chart and kind of sat down chat with them and sat down the slit lamp. And all of a sudden was just like, whoa, this isn't an eyeball. This is an ocular prosthetic. And I had no idea when I walked into the room. And this patient was a little bit, she just chuckled slightly to herself and said like, yep, that's my prosthetic. And then told me about her experience and her history of having an ocular trauma as a child and then having prosthetics. For me, it was a wonderful patient encounter. But again, it was, as JP mentioned, kind of allowed this woman to really just feel very comfortable in her own skin, interacting with people. And then as with was a great teaching moment for me learning as my first introduction to ocular prosthetics.
Wow, I think that really does connect with me and a lot of the trainees, I'm sure, in the audience, because being a medical student and in that environment, you learn quite a little bit. Dr. Ruta, why don't we also give you a chance to hear from your perspective?
Yeah, so I was 21, I think, at the time, and I was just in the dental technician school to be a dental technician. And then we had this course that we made an artificial eye, because it's something that dental technicians can quite easily do because the materials are kind of same. And so we have this course, and once I had done my 2 eyes, I just realized that this is definitely something that I want to do. It was more beautiful and smaller than making like dentures or anything. And then my journey towards my own company started when I put a small ad on web saying that I am in school for like half a year and I am looking for someone who has prosthetic eye to talk to. And then we could like share some ideas that what kind of prosthesis they prefer and stuff. And so then I met someone and he told me that everything that he wanted from a prosthetic. And then we agreed that he would come to my school and meet me. And so I was really, really nervous and I kept thinking, oh my God, what about the eye socket? Like, is it going to be awful to look at? And normal stuff that a small 21-year-old girl would think about someone with not having an eye. And so once the guy came to the school, I was really nervous and I was even a kind of afraid to look at the eye socket. But then once he took the prosthetic off, all my doubts were just like gone immediately. And I was so fascinated. And it was so interesting to like study it and look at it. And it was so amazing experience, like how your mind could just turn from like a little bit scared and then just so interested in. And then he was so kind. He helped me to like examine the eye socket. He told me which part were easy to touch and which weren't, and what should I do and where should I look and stuff. And from that moment on, I just knew that this is my path and I want to do this for the rest of my life.
That's just an incredible story. And I think it is going to open a lot of perspectives for, you know, the trainees in the audience, that if you get exposure and you can like formulate your goal, and sometimes serendipity just leads to career that you're passionate in. And I think that's just powerfully demonstrated with your story there. So with that, I think we are ready to transition to the second theme. I will pass it over to Grayson.
So the way that I like to start off theme two is just by asking, you've all had experiences in the world of eye care and oculoprosthetics coming from different ways, whether you're the user of them, the creator of them, or a prescriber of them. I'd like each of you to tell us about how you kind of came into this space, if there was an aha moment. I know we heard a little bit about that before, but what were some of the decisions that led you there along the way? How has your look so far? And what are some of the challenges that you faced in this space and some of the rewards you've had personally and professionally? And I guess we'll go backwards now. We can start with Laura and then go to Margot and JP. So Laura, you want to start?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, like I told, I was in the course and then I knew that the other company in Finland wouldn't hire me because I had a complete idea how to make a prosthetic eye. In Finland at the time, they didn't take impression from the eye socket. They just took a standard model and then shaped it to fit. And as a dental technician, that's something that we would never do to even to a teeth. So why eye sockets? I wanted to make an impression from the eye socket so that the prosthetic will fit and will move perfectly. The other idea that I had was that instead of painting the iris with like oil paints or acrylic paints, I wanted to take a really good camera and take a photo of client's normal eye or the other eye that is saved. When I take this macro photograph of the iris and put that inside the prosthetic eye, then they would match completely. And it doesn't have to be like what mood I'm in, do I paint enough or am I lazy today or anything, because the camera takes the whole picture and then I just put it inside the prosthesis. And so this was my business idea. This was my idea of how artificial eyes should be done. That's why I knew that the other company in Finland wouldn't hire me because they had their own way. And I was so young. So I just had to become an entrepreneur and start my own business. That's what I did as soon as I graduated from this dental technician school.
Did you get any pushback early on when you had this idea and you started your own business, being now the second kind of company in the country that can offer it? And then was it hard to find patients, and how was it kind of interacting with that patient population?
Well, I only started like really slowly and with low risk. I rented a place, like a table from dental technician laboratory. Then I had a little ad on the web. The patients that were most unsatisfied with the Finnish company, they Googled and Googled and then they found me. And then they came as a customer and they told me exactly what they wanted. And my hands were working and they were the wishes and hopes. That was really good combination because I had the hand techniques and they had the ideas. My hands helped to bring alive what they wanted. At first, I think I had like one customer per month, and then two customers, and then four and five. And slowly it just grew and grew. The feedback that I got, I mean, the first prosthetic that I made was awful and not good, but it still was, I might even say that it was in many areas better than the old one that they had. So that kept me going, and people were so relieved that now in Finland we have an option, because if there was some patient that wasn't happy with the result that the other company in Finland made, then what are you going to do about it? They could tell you that, okay, if you don't like this, then don't come back. And because it's the only option in Finland, the people feel like they are quite alone with the whole thing. But now when they had an option, they could come to me, and it was so relief for them. I hope this answered any of your questions.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. It's so fascinating. Thank you for sharing that. And Dr. Weiner, you interact with individuals who end up needing these prostheses. What's your experience been like, and what's your career trajectory, and what are some challenges and rewards along the way?
Yeah. So if I think kind of all the way back to like why I went into medicine, for me, a big part of that was having interactions with patients and relationships with patients and developing that one-on-one, I guess, relationship. I think people go into medicine for so many different reasons, but mine was very much, I want to look at the human across this lamp and I want to be able to help them in the best way that I possibly can. So coming into ophthalmology, there's so many reasons why ophthalmology is amazing. The visual component of ophthalmology, both from the perspective of the visual experience, is so essential to daily function for patients. But then also, I'm a very visual learner, and the fact that I can look at an eye and I can look and I can see the pathology that is inside, and I can use that as my primary method of figuring out what's going on and what our next steps are going to be, was, I just found it so intriguing and so interesting. And it's something that continues to fascinate me on a day-to-day basis. My other driver is an interest in education. I truly believe that being a physician is being an educator. While I have other interests in ophthalmic education, teaching medical students and residents from that perspective, I think that if you approach every patient as a teacher in terms of educating patients about the eye disease process that's involving their eye and then working with them from that perspective, that's how you provide the best care. Kind of thinking about the individual patient and the education component is how I really stepped into the chief resident role after graduation. I love teaching. I love working with residents, and I work with them in surgical settings and clinical settings. As part of that, I will say I didn't actually seek out the ocular trauma component. That's kind of something that came with the job, and it's something that I found interesting because all trauma is very different. But I would say was actually my primary motivator into this year. I have been incredibly, I guess, pleasantly surprised by how rewarding the experience has been working with trauma patients. From a kind of technical perspective, every trauma is different. Every trauma is a different puzzle in terms of how to put the eye back together in the best way we can. But really then establishing the relationship with these patients who come in usually in the worst day of their life. I'll always talk about how we wish everybody wore eye protection all the time, 24/7. Really, when it comes down to it, most of the patients I see, it's not that they did something without eye protection. Most of the time, it's just really bad luck in terms of why these patients suffer trauma. It's been such a, you know, interesting process working with these patients going through. We also actually have them work with a trauma psychologist and really trying to think about the holistic perspective on these patients. As we've gone through the year and worked with people, the initial conversation is always, I just want you to save my eye. I just want you to save my eye. This the physical structure. And we warn patients we might not be able to save vision, but we're going to try and save their eye. And most of the time, we can save the eye. Sometimes we can't. But then after that comes the impact of often having an eye that looks different. Sometimes it's because of this process that JP was describing of the eye kind of shrinking. It's called ptysis. Shrinking as the eye, basically the function of the eye shuts down. That can cause shrinkage, and that can really change the appearance of the orbit of the eye. Sometimes it's because there's scar formation. Sometimes it's because the eye no longer points in the correct direction. There's strabismus. And with all of these things, that's often kind of the second phase of trauma for patients is talking about, okay, they've maybe come to terms about the loss of vision, but then it's, okay, what is my daily experience? How do I interact with the world in a way that lets me be as much of the person I was before this trauma happened to me? And that's where I feel like we're so lucky here in New England as well to work with some amazing ocularists and some beautiful prosthetics, that I feel so lucky that I can talk to patients about these options that are available to them in the work that's done to try and, again, really look at these patients from a holistic perspective. A lot of that has to do with the experience of looking someone in the eye. People say the eye is the window to the soul, but looking someone in the eye, and these people, my patients often feel like it's interesting. You see that you feel that they avoid eye contact or things like that. Some of my patients, then after they get their prosthetics, they come back and they're completely transformed to, again, the confident people that they were before this trauma. I feel very lucky to work with patients through this process. I think that in terms of the challenges and rewards, I hope that I've expressed just how rewarding it is working with these patients. I think sometimes the challenges can be sometimes convincing people that there are options for you. I think that with trauma, it can be really hard to kind of overcome the variety of barriers. And again, I really see my role to really make sure that patients know every other options that are available to them and to offer my experience to hopefully help them get to a stage where they're happy with their visual experience and their opinion.
Your patients are really lucky to have you, Dr. Weinert, and it's a testament to your hard work and to your compassionate manner that you're able to, you know, really serve them in the best way. So thank you. And JP, certainly last but not least here on this theme, can you tell us about some challenges and some rewards that you've had in this space? So you have become kind of a spokesperson in this area. Let's hear a little bit about that and what that was like and what your experience has been like in the recent past.
Okay, so I feel like I need to add to what was just said. And prosthetics has really opened a lot of opportunities for me in my life. I feel like I've been able to gain my confidence back. Like she mentioned earlier, when someone struggles with their eye, the eyes are the window to you. It's the first thing you look at. When someone looks at you, they look at your eyes. And when that is something that you do not like about yourself, blinding your eye or your eyes, you're kind of being vulnerable and you're showing a side to yourself which you can't really hide. People have to always look at your flaws, if I could say it that. I wouldn't say it's a flaw. I feel like it's become a strength to me at this point. But people are forced to always look at your flaws and you can't hide them because it's your eyes. And having a prosthetic really opened doors for me. When I go for job interviews, I can put my prosthetic in. I can look normal. I can not feel judged, which is amazing. I feel like a prosthetic really changed my life. And then I also want to say to the previous question, because I feel like I've also never met anyone else with a prosthetic. I feel like it's such a rare thing to happen to a person that myself, I've never met anyone else. I feel like it would be cool. I'd love to meet someone else with a prosthetic as well, just because I feel like we have a lot in common. I've mentioned this to former ocularists, but I think they can't really share information about their patients. I would love to meet someone else in person. I think we have a lot in common and we could definitely talk about that. And then can you repeat the question just quickly so I can answer it to the best of my abilities?
Absolutely. JP, I was curious, now that you've taken on this role of being a spokesperson on social media and an advocate in this space, what are some of the challenges and pushback you've had, or any challenging moments, but also some rewarding experiences that you've had?
Challenging moments, definitely. I'd say not everyone accepts you the way you are. You're always kind of going to have haters and people are going to push back against you. People aren't really going to accept the way you are. I feel like it's important to kind of stand up for yourself and keep your self-respect. You shouldn't be scared of anyone, or you shouldn't want their acceptance. At the end of the day, you might have haters. You might have people who don't like you. And that's okay. It's okay to be different. I think that's the biggest challenge as a monocular person, because you do look different. The prosthetic doesn't always have the same amount of movement. I remember getting my first prosthetic and the movement was amazing. I was 14 years old. Honestly, you could not tell the difference. But because my retina was damaged, my eye started shrinking. Because it started shrinking, the movement of my prosthetic started getting less and less. Because of that, it started getting more noticeable and people would comment on it. At the end of the day, don't let anyone belittle you. Stand up for yourself, keep your self-respect, and it's okay to be different. I think that's the most important message.
Thank you so much. I mean, this is so incredibly enlightening and I can't thank you all enough for being here.
Thank you so much, Grayson. And I couldn't agree more. These stories have been inspiring, to say the least. We're going to move on to our third theme. I pass it off to Ricky.
Hey, Mike, thank you so much. So I, like the other IT team members have mentioned, I've really enjoyed all of the perspectives today and really the innovative ideas and the inspiring thoughts from people working in this field. Just building on that, for our final theme, We want to find out what it is about vision that fascinates each one of you. Can you tell us about some of the exciting innovations that maybe you're familiar with that most other people wouldn't know about? And JP, you were just talking. Why don't we bring you back up onto the stage to share? Just what innovations in the field do you know about, or what about vision particularly fascinates you?
Okay. Since I started going blind when I was 7 years old, I had questions like, what would have happened to me if I went blind? Who would have helped me? I feel like that kind of helped me for my career path. I'm currently studying to become an orientation and mobility specialist. What that is, just for the viewers, is when someone goes completely blind, they need someone to help them adjust to being blind. They, for instance, let's say a blind person needs to go to a shopping center. They need someone to walk with them and help them adjust. They need to be taught that they need to count their steps. It's going to be 405 steps, and then you're going to go right, and you have to stop at 200 steps. There's going to be a traffic light. You need to watch out. You could be hit by traffic. And then you kind of guide them to the shopping center where they eventually can get their groceries and help themselves with their day-to-day life experience. So an orientation mobility specialist helps them with that. I'm currently studying to do that. I feel like my experience where I almost went blind helps me to pick this career path where I could go in that direction to help people who are blind or need to adjust to being blind. That's what intrigues me about vision. I wouldn't say I'm glad that this happened to me, but I feel like if this never happened to me, I would not have chosen this path and I wouldn't have been able to help these people. And that's kind of my drive at the moment, to be able to give back and just be happy at where I am and be happy that I can give back, because I have a lot of empathy towards these people, especially blind people, because that could have been me. And luckily, a doctor was able to save the vision in my right eye, and that's why I am where I am today. Yeah, that's what intrigues me about vision. I honestly wish my vision could improve, but I know at the moment for technology, it's not necessarily possible. But I have hope for the future. I think that technology will improve, and maybe somehow, maybe it will even be a camera that will be linked to your eye. Maybe it will be a cyborg way, or an Elon Musk at the moment has a microchip that you can implant in your brain, and it might be able to help the disabled. So I have hope for the future. Maybe my vision will one day improve. But if not, I feel like I've been put in on this journey to help people like myself and even help people less fortunate than me. I think that's all I have to say about the topic.
JP, thank you so much for sharing that. I know that this is a very personal topic to you, and we really appreciate all of your insights and thoughts here. We did actually want to mention and highlight, there's a lot of really exciting research in this area. I know that some of us in the field of ophthalmology are probably familiar with the Argus II, the bionic eye that has been implanted in some patients with retinal degenerative disorders, things like retinitis pigmentosa. And coming out of Europe, there are actually a number of different retinal chip implants. We actually have a podcast with Dr. Jose Alain Sahel. He was my department chairman going through my residency training at the University of Pittsburgh. And the University of Pittsburgh recently was the first site in the U.S. to implant a new retinal chip implant that's being used in Europe and now is starting clinical trials in the U.S. And so I think there's a lot of really exciting technology with being able to improve vision. So far, a lot of these retinal prosthetic devices that functions a little bit like kind of, they're these big external devices, or it functions kind of like a camera. Vision is often black and white and maybe not the best quality, but these retinal chip implants, these microchips, they're including more and more microsensors so that the precision and the quality of that vision is better. I think we'll get better and better visual acuity with time. I do think there's some limitations to that technology, just because the idea that someone like JP, who had good vision and then went blind later in life, has the neural pathways developed where you can tap into all these brain pathways that already exist. And so we're just really having to tease out some of those things in the field. But we've done other podcasts on this, and I would love it if people would follow up on that if they are more interested in hearing about that. I do want to make time for Margo and Laura to jump in and share as well about, I know that Laura was talking about her own innovations in this area, and that was really exciting. Maybe you'd want to jump in and share a little bit about what Envision Science is fascinating to you.
Yeah, sure. Well, in order to meet me, people need to have lost their vision. So what Margaret said about raising self-esteem and confidence, that is my thing. And with my innovations, I feel that I have really done that in Finland. And it's funny because when I post anything on my Instagram, ocularists all over the world send me questions and ask if I could teach them and ask me what machines I use and stuff. So I feel and I hope that I can be a really good help all over the world to ocularists and people who have lost their vision. But I'm so grateful because this is funny because my work is to make someone look, so to say, normal or look like they haven't had their eye removed or stuff. But then we have people like JP who are raising the self-esteem in a completely different way. They are embracing the thing that has happened to them. They are not trying to cover it. They want to talk about it and they want to highlight it. And that is so amazing. And so many of my, especially young customers, young boys, they have had so much confidence when I have told and showed JP's pictures and videos to them. Because he, if I can say, he is really good looking. And so my young customers can really look up to him and understand that someday they can be successful, they can be handsome. This eye doesn't hold them back. It can even lift them up. And that is why I love this area of business so much. I can help them hide away with a really good looking prosthetic, but then I can also help them light up like JP. And I'm so grateful for this.
Thanks for that great answer, Laura. And Margo, I actually am going to shift the topic a little bit for you. I know that you are in an academic setting. One other thing that we wanted to touch on is if you could go back in time and give a piece of advice to your younger self, or maybe fast forward to the future and hear some wisdom with a young trainee in vision, what would you tell them?
Oh, that's a great question. I think my first piece of advice would basically apply to anyone in medicine, maybe not vision specific, which is to find the core motivating factors that drive you and use that in making your decisions moving forward. I would love to say that ophthalmology is a great fit and that everybody should go into it because the eye is just this fascinating organ and being involved in the quality of life that vision provides is just so rewarding. But I really feel like it's funny looking back on my own trajectory, even though it hasn't been that long yet. In hindsight, it makes a lot of sense, but in the process, it feels like you're digging through the weeds. I think my first piece of advice is just to really find those core things that drive you. And like I said, for me, it's the individual patient experience and it's education. I really think about those two things are my core drivers. And if you can find those, no matter what pathway you take, you're going to find satisfaction if you use those to drive your decision-making. I guess the second thing in terms of people maybe who want to go specifically into ophthalmology is that this is such a rapidly evolving specialty. We are involved with medical advances, we're involved with surgical advances, imaging advances, and the field of ophthalmology will not be the same in 10 years that it is now. And that is so cool. But it also means that what you see now, you cannot depend on that being what the world will be in 10 years. I think really falling in love with the organ, the disease process, the people, and if those are the things that really appeal to you more so than the specific treatments or surgeries, you're going to be so successful in this field because you're going to find such reward in being a part of the advances moving forward.
Thank you so much. I think that was a really great answer that tied up our final theme for the day pretty well. This has been a really exciting and fun talk with a really unique set of panelists today and people literally chiming in from all over the world. I'm really appreciative of everyone's time being here with us today.
Thank you for a great answer, all of you, for that particular question, because we take pride in just trying to inspire the young, you know, generation for this new area that we just talked about. We want all of you to follow JP on his Instagram and Dr. Ruta on their Instagram and Dr. Weinert on their Instagram, because these are really some amazing people that you would want to follow in ophthalmology and vision in general. I think this is awesome. Kitrin has some questions of her own that she would want to ask.
Yeah, I guess for the trainees out in the audience who hasn't had experience in this, can you share a little bit about how one goes about fitting a prosthetic? Is there any pain involved? I know that sometimes, especially with younger folks who have just lost their eye, they might need to use a spacer first. Can each of you kind of tell us about what the fitting process is like and what the life of a prosthetic is like? How often do you have to change that? And if you have any tips on how to maintain that. JP, why don't you go ahead?
Okay, so I've had a few prosthetics in my life, and they normally last about 4 to 5 years, because this is what I've been taught, is the eye changes as it decays, because your eye isn't being used anymore. It's kind of dying. And for that reason, it will lose some movement, it will shrink, it will change form, it might start drifting to the left or the right, simply because your body isn't using it anymore. So it's not feeding the eye anymore. It's not giving it life, if that makes sense. For that reason, the prosthetic, to be perfect, you have to kind of constantly get a new one. Every 2, 3, 4 years, depending on the person, it is recommended to get a new one, simply because the movement will get worse and worse over time as the eye kind of decays. Eventually, it might happen where your eye hits a point where the doctors might want to remove your eye. From there, you kind of get an implant in your eye. I'm not sure how that process works. I haven't gotten there yet, but it might be a possibility that eventually they might have to remove your eye. Then when you get a prosthetic, I think it is more permanent. I think Laura will be able to explain this a bit better. But once the eye is removed, I don't think the eye changes anymore. So it might not be necessary to change the prosthetic that often.
Yeah, that's completely true. In Finland, I have done more prosthesis to eyes that the eye have been removed and there's implant. In Finland, we have this system that in every 5 years, you get a new prosthetic for free. Of course, children will get one whenever they grow up or grow more, like once a year or in every 6 months, depending on the child. But yeah, in Finland, we change them in about 5 years because the eye socket changes still a bit, and the coloration of the eye can change. So it's important to change them. You asked whether it would hurt or anything. And in my experience, if it hurts, something has been done incorrectly. Whenever I make prosthetic eyes and fit them and manufacture them, there's no pain at all. They should fit like a glove. And so then there will be no pain.
Thank you for that. And maybe Dr. Weinert, if you could tell the trainees a little bit about the different types of eye removal process, like evisceration versus enucleation, and how that might affect the socket.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's, as JP mentioned, there's oftentimes if patients retain their eye, there is this shrinking process called ptysis that can have this slowly changing evolution to the eye shape and the socket shape. But people can have the eye removed in a couple of different ways. The three are evisceration, enucleation, and then exenteration is a much more extensive process. With evisceration, we remove the cornea, and then we remove all of the intraocular contact. But the scleral shell remains, and so the muscles attached there also remain intact. And some sort of implant is placed inside the scleral shell, it can be silicone or a couple of different materials. And then the sclera is sewed over that implant. You basically have functionally a smaller eyeball that still has the sclera and still has the muscles. And then the tenons and conjunctiva, that smooth surface, is then closed over the top of that entire complex. And so if you look into the orbit, you're just going to see basically this kind of smooth pink conjunctival surface over which, once that's healed, over which a scleral shell or prosthetic can be placed. A big component of that, and after healing, is using something like a spacer or something to keep the fornices intact so that you can really have a space for that scleral shell to be put underneath the eyelids. Enucleation is actually where the physical eyeball, including the sclera, is removed. In a planned operation, usually we will remove the extraocular muscles and then attach them to a separate round prosthetic. Again, there's a variety of materials so that once again, that has the ability to have movement underneath the eventual prosthetic. Once again, all of that conjunctival tissue is closed over the top of things. The big difference between nucleation and evisceration is retaining some of that ocular tissue in the form of the sclera in particular. Evisceration is a much larger process, usually reserved for things like cancer, where there's a concern for, you know, the whole orbit and actually removing the eyeball, but also muscle, the fat, and basically everything inside the orbit itself, the entire socket is removed. In those cases, we don't have great options currently for prosthetics. Typically, there are different ways that we work with patients in terms of changing the appearance, things like actually specially printed, I'm losing the word, but basically things can stick over the orbit, like a big sticker, basically, that is printed to look like the other side. In that case, we lose the structure that can be provided to support an ocular prosthetic.
Wow, thank you all so much for sharing those different perspectives with us, from the patient perspective to the design elements that you consider and the functionality and the movement of the prosthetic as well. This has been a fantastic session on ocular prosthetics and eye-opening, if you will.
It has really been enlightening, especially having the three different perspectives of someone who has had to have an ocular prosthesis, someone who makes these prostheses, and someone who prescribes them. I think this has really been a complete, wholesome experience, really valuable that you all could make time today. I really echo what Kitchen said there. We would like to give all the speakers a chance to close out and give their closing remarks. Why don't we start with Dr. Ruta?
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was really interesting hearing, although I have been talking with JP a lot, so I know a little about his story and stuff, but still, it was really interesting for me as well. So thank you for having me.
Awesome. How about you, Dr. Weinert?
Well, this has been a great experience. Thank you so much for having me. I have to echo that, you know, even being in this world, I feel like I learned so much from Laura and from JP. So just appreciate the opportunity and for the chance to share my experience.
Thanks for doing this with us. How about you, JP? Thank you for making time.
I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for the opportunity. And I think if there's anything I would just want to tell the audience, for any binocular people out there, is you kind of have to learn to stand up for yourself. People might criticize you. People might try to belittle you, but never allow that to happen. Stand up for yourself. And it's important to keep your self-respect and your dignity. At the end of the day, everyone has haters. Everyone has people who don't like them. Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who I think is amazing, has people who don't like him. It's not necessarily because you have one eye that people don't like. It's just everyone has haters. Everyone isn't perfect. At the end of the day, I think it's important for monocular people to realize that it's not because of your eye that people might not like you or will try and belittle you. It might even be because they're intimidated. They see purpose. They see value. They see who you could become. And that intimidates people. Because of that, people will try and belittle you, and stand up for yourself. Never let anyone walk over you, and stay strong. You can reach any goal you want. There's nothing different to you than anyone else. I'm from Africa. I've done everything in life that I've wanted to. I've moved to America, which was a major obstacle. And I've even become a model, which is something seen as beauty. You're supposed to be perfect. You're a model. You're supposed to not have flaws. But here I am. I have flaws. I'm not perfect, but I'm still a model. I'm at the moment pursuing acting. I might even be an actor one day. And chase your dreams. Never give up. And don't let your disability or anything in life hold you back. I think that's the most important message. Just keep going, keep grinding, and push forward. I believe you can make your dreams possible.
Wow, that's just very powerful, right from the heart there. I appreciate it, JP. We really appreciate what you do, and we really wish you all the best for all your endeavors.
If you want more IT-related content, follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Also, find us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast. Search for E by E T E A. IT.